Welcome to our discussion of Purim, the happiest of holidays. Usually we assume that Purim is the happiest of holidays. But then again, if that's true, then let's say was sitting Shiva. So, and God forbid, Purim then encountered Purim. Would they continue sitting Shiva? Can they be happy and sad at the same day? Is Purim like Pesach that cancels the Shiva? Let's take a look at the sources and think about this for a little bit. So if we think about it, Purim, while it celebrates our salvation from near death, it's the holiday of near death. So it's happy Purim, everybody, but it's also the holiday of near doomsday. So how do we do that? How does it work? How do we celebrate something like that? Why do we celebrate in this kind of way? Can one mourn on Purim and why? This class was originally given to the sisterhood, and that's the ASBE. Alina S. Katz Sisterhood and their Sisterhood Luncheon. And can you mourn on Purim and why? We're going to have to answer the question, why? Why Shalachmanis? Why on this particular holiday do we have to give gifts one to another? Why not on Hanukkah? Why gifts to the poor? We have to remember that whereas at the time of Purim we almost died many times. 586 BCE, 70 CE, 1097. The destruction of the first temple, the second temple, the crusaders, the expulsion from Spain, 1492, 1648 to 1654, a long period of time of the Khmelnytsky pogroms where tens of thousands of Jews were killed. 1881, 1905, Kishinev pogroms. Again, after emancipation, after enlightenment, Jews being thrown out the window, Jews being killed indiscriminately in Europe. Of course, Holocaust 1939 to 45, and even 1967, more recently, Jews were worried that they would be wiped into the sea as Nasser had threatened. And today, were there ever dying people? Because people say, well, if the Jews continue to assimilate, will there be a Jewish people? We're always on a near-death trajectory. But of course, we never actually die. So maybe Purim is about the audacity to celebrate, that things that despite our near death, somehow we find it within ourselves to celebrate. Look at the irony. The Megillah says it was upside down. It was topsy-turvy. It was crazy because the Jews killed their enemies. Whoever heard that in exile, that in diaspora, the Jews would be victorious? Usually it's the other way around. We almost expect to die, but when Jews actually were victorious, this was a great cause for celebration. So what would it look like to even celebrate the fact that you almost died? What would it look like? So the Talmud has an interesting solution. A person has to besumi on Purim until they don't know the difference between cursed is Haman to blessed is Mordechai. Generally, besumi is translated as get really drunk. That a person should get really drunk on Purim until they don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. That they forget the whole story, which seems strange. How can you celebrate a holiday by forgetting what the purpose of the holiday is? And it seems strange. After all, the Meiri pointed out that there's nothing more disgusting than drunkenness. You don't need to open the Bible much to know that Noah disgraced himself when he was drunk. Lot and his daughter, he disgraced himself when he was drunk. Why would someone want to get drunk? It leads to sin, immorality, the worst type of sin, as the Mishnah Berurah points out. And yet the Talmud seems to say that. Now, of course, how do we understand that? We try to reread this line. We say a man is obligated. Well, we don't really mean. Firstly, it's only a man, not a woman. So half the people are excluded. No drinking, no drunkenness. Number two, obligated. We're not really obligated. It's just you could do it if you want to. To besumi doesn't mean drunk. It means you should have a little buzz. Until doesn't mean you should get so drunk until the point that you don't know the difference between one thing and the other, but rather up to that point, but not including. Doesn't know. It doesn't really mean that he doesn't know. The difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Not that drunk that you don't even know the difference between Haman and Mordechai, but if you do the numerology of the two, they're very similar. And perhaps if you get to a point where you can't do the math, that would be a point of drunkenness. And then there's the story. After saying this statement, the Talmud tells a story that one rabbi visited another and he killed him, or he made him faint, or he made him nearly die. Somehow through prayer, he revived him. The next year, the rabbi invited the fellow back to another joyous occasion. And the rabbi said, look, not every year will a miracle happen. I'm not coming. So this story, rather than just being sort of a humorous or not so humorous story, perhaps it's a cautionary tale. Don't follow this law. You think that's the law. The story says that's not the law. don't get drunk. It's very bad. It leads to terrible things. But still, why would anybody ever suggest? Why was there even a thought that you should get not just drunk, but very drunk on Purim? Well, what are we celebrating on Purim? Gordon Liu's written instructions were dispatched by the couriers of the king's provinces to destroy, massacre, and exterminate all the Jews, young and old, children and women, on a single day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions, not only to kill us, but to take our money too. Young and old, children and women. So the Torah is telling us, the Megillah is telling us, that this what was going to happen was a total destruction. And who wanted to do this? Well, you know, if someone who's not that powerful wants to kill the Jew, let's say Ahmadinejad. So he's there in Iran. So he has a few Jews in Iran. They're not going to kill all the Jews in Iran. He can't kill all the Jews in the whole world. He doesn't have that power. But not Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus reigned over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. No fewer than 180 days, he displayed his vast riches of his kingdom. He was the ruler of many, and he was very wealthy and was strong enough to continue to be the leader of provinces from India to Ethiopia. I mean, that's the whole civilized world at the time, the world we were aware of, the world where Jews lived, and he was in charge. So it was a near destruction of men, women, and children, and the person who made the decree was well capable of carrying it out, and wasn't much room for escaping. So if it's really a sad day, then we have to ask, well, can you mourn on that day? If it's a sad day, then we would mourn. If you say it's a happy day, then you should cancel the mourning. So the Talmud points out in Megillah that there are several things that are not worthy of saying Hallel on this day. Usually on a happy day, you say Hallel, songs of Thanksgiving, Psalms of Thanksgiving. But on Purim, we don't. Why not? Number one, when the story is over, we're still servants of Ahasuerus. We weren't killed, but now we're still stuck under this fickle king who any moment could kill us. Number two, it wasn't in the land of Israel. You can't celebrate victory on quicksand and you're in exile. That's no victory. And we weren't in Israel. So it's not fit for saying Hallel. There are other answers as well. Those answers show you how incomplete the victory was on Purim. We were at the end of the story, we were still subject to the same fickle leader, perhaps evil leader, and we weren't in Israel where we belong. Shulchan Aruch says that the Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Sephardic author of the Shulchan Aruch, says, Code of Jewish Law, he says, you can mourn on Hanukkah and Purim. If a person, God forbid, is sitting Shiva and Hanukkah comes along, continues sitting on the floor, takes his shoes off. Same thing on Purim. However, the Ashkenazic authority on the Code of Jewish Law, the Rabbi Moshe Isserles from Krakow, he said, well, some people say that you shouldn't mourn on Purim. Hanukkah, fine, but not Purim. What's the law? So there were other rabbis in Ashkenazic rabbis of the Bach, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis, he was at Krakow. They said that they would mourn. But some of the general custom has become not to mourn, certainly not to wear shoes, not to take off shoes, not to take off your shoes and sit on the floor. Those two things, not to do on Purim. But you shouldn't have too many joyous things. So this idea that even this whole Sephardic community, half the Jews, do mourn on Purim, shows you that Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out, you can't force someone to be happy and sad at the same time. You can tell someone, sit on the floor and drink a glass of wine. You can do that. That's no problem. But to be happy and sad, which is the idea of mourning and the idea of Purim, I thought, those two don't seem to coincide unless Shiva is all about being sad, but Purim isn't about being happy. So what is it? Is it a yontif? The Gemara says that originally it says a day of gladness and feasting and a good day, a yontif. But later in the Megillah, it says, a couple of verses later, they would make days of feasting and gladness. It doesn't say yontif, because it didn't become a true yontif. Why not? Perhaps it's because of what we explained, that you can't celebrate the fact that we almost died. That's not exactly a great celebration. We weren't completely annihilated. Is that really a celebration? And therefore, you can explain several customs. And I thank my wife, Bloomer, for someone helped me think about this part. She said, why do we have costumes? Think about it. Costumes, covering up your face. Huh? Because the real face looks like this. I was almost killed. But my phony face that I put on top, I have a drink of wine, I eat meat, I have a good meal, and I put on a mask to mask my true feelings. Why drunkenness? Because drunkenness is the perfect thing. You see, having a glass of wine is something you do at a celebration. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, we have wine. At the Seder, 4 cups. But drunkenness is something we do when we're depressed. I'm not a scholar, but I heard that alcohol is a depressant. It actually makes you sadder. So that's appropriate. To drink a lot of alcohol will actually make you more sad. And that's what it is. What do people do sometimes when they just don't know how to cope with something? You get drunk. Should you get drunk? No. But that's what people often do, because that's the appropriate thing, the only way to respond to our near death. And why Shalach Manos and Matos of Yonim? Why give gifts? Why give gifts to the poor? Why give gifts to your neighbor? Perhaps because when the Jews are almost killed, we need to stick together and strengthen each other, or we'll be in big trouble. But actually, rather than being sort of a Debbie Downer about this whole thing, that somehow this is everyone thinks Purim is a happy day, and comes Rabbi Finkelstein and says, no, it's not a happy day, it's a sad day. No, actually, this idea that we have any sort of celebration on Purim should make us very happy. Why is that? Because if you can be happy about this, you can be happy about anything. A Jew who's able to say, you know, I was almost killed, let's celebrate. Let's have a l'chaim. Let's have two glasses of wine. Let's have a big party. Let's dance and be joyous. If someone can celebrate the fact that he wasn't killed, she wasn't killed, that is a true sign of happiness. Because if you can celebrate that, you can celebrate anything. You can have the worst day of your life and you can say, well, you know what? I'm still alive. I wasn't killed. It's a very Jewish thing to say, well, it could have been worse. You know, it's bad, but it could have been worse. Sitting in the hospital, how are things? Well, it could have been worse. I could have been dead, right? I fell off a cliff. Well, I broke every bone in my body, but I could have been dead. It's a Jewish way of looking at it. I'm not saying the Jews are the only people who look at it that way, but it's certainly a trait that we've picked up over the centuries, that Jews have been able to say, you know what? If you weren't killed, let's celebrate. So if we ask ourselves, you know, is it the happiest of holidays? Well, it kind of. I mean, we're saying that we're happy even though it's so sad that it almost led to our complete destruction. But on the other hand, it is not so happy. It's a day when we get drunk, or most rabbis say we don't get drunk, but it's a day when theoretically one might suggest you get drunk, because there's almost no other way to deal with it. We do deal with it. We realize that we live by the grace of God. We live because we have no one to lean on other than God himself. And that itself should bring some joy, because Ahasuerus is not really in charge. He may be the ruler over 127 provinces. And there are other great leaders who will take over the world at various times with their great evil. But really, they're not completely in charge. God is in charge. And in the end, Jews, we will be victorious and we will survive, even if we sometimes suffer great losses. We will survive. We will thrive. We will continue. We'll persevere. So that sort of notion that despite everything else, we can still celebrate life itself. That's the greatest secret to happiness. And that's the secret that's found in the mitzvah of Purim. Thank you for joining us here at the Anshei Sfarad Beth Lomath for our discussion of Purim. Join us each week for discussions of various holidays and Torah portions. And thank you for joining us.